The following podcast contains advertising. To access an ad-free version of the Lawfare podcast, become a material supporter of Lawfare at patreon.com/lawfare. That's patreon.com/lawfare. Also, check out Lawfare's other podcast offerings, Rational Security, Chatter, Lawfare No Bull, and The Aftermath.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
I am Elena Kagan, and this is the Lawfare Podcast Bonus Edition, May 6, 2020. Representative John Radcliffe testified before the Senate Select Intelligence Committee as part of his nomination for the position of Director of National Intelligence. Radcliffe was asked about his views on Russian interference, about the threat posed by North Korea, about how he would handle a variety of issues posed by the coronavirus pandemic, and much more. The hearing was fairly substantive, but did include some meandering and grandstanding. So we cut out all the unnecessary repetition and theatrics to leave you with just the questions and answers that you need to hear. It's the Lawfare Podcast Bonus Edition, Radcliffe versus the Committee with No Bull.
Congressman Radcliffe, several questions. When you're confirmed to be DNI, you'll be walking into an organization that's been led for quite some time by acting officials. It applies to the position for which you've been nominated, but also more recently to the Inspector General's office. Independence and ability to speak truth to power are critical in both offices. Can you speak to your views of the importance of the intelligence community's Inspector General and your expectations of what the office, of that office as DNI?
Senator, thank you for the question. You made reference to acting officials. I have been an acting official for a period of time. I was acting U.S. attorney, so I have an appreciation for why Senate-confirmed leadership does make a difference and is important, and I appreciate this committee considering me in that regard. I also appreciate the comments that you've made, as has Vice Chairman Warner, about speaking truth to power, and I very much intend to do that if confirmed as DNI. With regard to the Inspector General position, I have a strong record of supporting and defending and working with Inspector Generals. For example, I have publicly defended Inspector General Michael Horowitz, even when some of my colleagues have criticized his work, and even when I have disagreed with some of his opinions. But I understand the role and the importance of the Inspector Generals because there will always be misconduct, waste, fraud, and abuse when you have government. I am very committed, if confirmed as DNI, to working with the Inspector General to make sure that the intelligence community has that type of process in place to ensure that the intelligence community is always acting in the best interest of the American people.
Congressman, over the course of the last 3 years, this committee has issued 4 reports about Russia's meddling in our elections, covering Russia's intrusions into state election systems, their use of social media to attempt to influence the election, and most recently confirming the findings of the 2017 Intelligence Community Assessment. While being mindful of the fact that we're in an unclassified setting, what are your views on Russia's meddling in our elections?
Chairman, my views are that Russia meddled in or interfered with active measures in 2016, they interfered in 2018, they will attempt to do so in 2018. They have a goal of sowing discord, and they have been successful in sowing discord. Fortunately, based on the good work of this committee, we know that they may have been successful in that regard, but they have not been successful in changing votes or the outcome of any election. The intelligence community, as you know, plays a vital role in ensuring that we have safe, secure, and credible elections, and that every vote cast by every American is done so properly and counted properly.
Will you commit to bringing information about threats to the election infrastructure and about foreign governments' efforts to influence elections to Congress so we're fully and currently informed?
I will.
Will you commit to testify at this committee's annual worldwide threats hearing?
I will.
And last question, I mentioned that over the past 3 years, we have issued 4 reports. Number 5 is finished. Number 5 will go for declassification. Do we have your commitment as DNI that you would expeditiously go through the declassification process?
You do.
Senator Warner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You actually took some of my questions.
My eyesight is good.
Mr. Ratcliffe, again, good to see you, and I appreciated our time last Friday. I want to follow up on a couple of the chairman's questions first. You know, as we discussed, we are volume 5, and so far our first 4 volumes have all been unanimous, or I think maybe with the exception of 1 dissenting vote. You know, if we get this document to the ODNI, you know, we need your commitment not only that we do it expeditiously, but as much as possible to get that volume 5 reviewed, redacted, and released, ideally before the August recess. Now, I know you've not seen the report yet. All I would ask is aspirationally that you commit to that goal, because I think, as we discussed, to have a document that could be, you know, potentially significant come out in the midst of a presidential campaign isn't good or fair on either side. So if I could clarify a little bit, recognizing that you've not seen the document, it is 1,000 pages, that you would try to get this cleared prior to August.
Vice Chairman, I will again commit that I will work with you to get that declassified as expeditiously as possible.
Okay. Again, our goal is to get it out before August. On again, following up on the chairman's comments, and we talked about this in person, but I want, for the committee and for the public record, you've indicated that you do believe that Russia interfered. What this committee's judgment was, particularly in volume 4, but throughout all volumes, was that not only did Russia interfere, but during their interference in 2016, they had a selected candidate they were for and a selected candidate they were against, for candidate Trump against candidate Clinton. Have you had a chance to review our documents, and have you reached a similar conclusion, a conclusion that actually reinforces the unanimous conclusion of the intelligence community assessment, or can you comment on our volume 4?
Yeah, Senator, I very much appreciate the bipartisan approach in which this committee addressed that issue. I did have a chance to review volume 4, which I know confirms the IC assessment. I have no reason to dispute the committee's findings. I will say that I have no reason to dispute the committee that I serve on, HPSI, the House Intelligence Committee's finding, which is a different perspective with regard to that one issue that you mentioned about a preference for a candidate. I was not on the committee at that time. I respect both committees, but I have not seen the underlying intelligence to tell me why there is a difference of opinion between the two committees. But I, again, very much appreciate Volume 4 and the work that this committee put in. And again, I would reiterate the most important takeaway from the findings, I think, of both committees is that as Russia continues to sow discord, that they have not been successful in changing votes or the outcome of election, and we need to remain committed to making sure that that does not happen in the future.
Respectfully, to me, to make that kind of assessment and to decide how we're going to prevent Russia's further interference in 2020, if they have a clear preference for one candidate over another, that would just also alter how we counter those efforts. So I really hope that you will spend the time and look at the underlying intelligence If you find that you reach a conclusion that is different than the unanimous conclusion of the intelligence community or the unanimous conclusion of the CISI here, I would expect a brief on that and pointing out how you found our conclusions or the IC's conclusions were inaccurate. You'll commit to come back to us if you've reached a different conclusion once you've reviewed that underlying intelligence.
I will.
One of the things we also discussed in an area of the community that seems under assault with the acting ODNI, and that is the election security unit. There's obviously different parts of the IC. The NSA has a group. The IC has, or the CIA has a group. But one of the most important is the group that is stood up by Director Coates. It includes intelligence professionals like Shelby Pearson. They have briefed us on a regular basis. I would like your commitment that since we are literally less than 6 months away from this year's presidential elections, that you will not take any efforts to dismantle the current leadership of the Election Security Unit or the current capabilities of the Election Security Unit this close to the 2020 election.
Senator, I have no intention of making changes in that regard.
And that unit, should they have data that is relevant and appropriate for this committee's responsibility, that unit will be able to continue on a regular basis to brief this committee?
Senator, I want to make sure that I'm clear throughout the day that if confirmed as DNI and I look at the global threat landscape, I mentioned the global pandemic and the IC's role with respect to that. But the other immediate concern is safe, secure, credible elections, and I will do everything and make it my highest priority, if confirmed, to do everything possible that we have those safe, secure, credible elections in 2020.
Should you be confirmed, you know, we are already past due date on when we would have the traditional worldwide threat hearing. You've committed to the chairman that you would hold that hearing. My hope would be that that commitment would take place within 60 days of you being confirmed.
Senator, I'll make a commitment to, I look forward, if confirmed, to appearing as a DNI in a worldwide threats hearing. I don't want to make a commitment in terms of time that I don't know what I'm promising exactly. What I will make the commitment is that if confirmed, I agree that it's important and I will work to make that happen as expeditiously as possible.
Senator Feinstein.
Thanks very much, Mr. Chairman. Congressman, welcome. I'd like to ask you a couple of questions about whistleblowers, if I might. This committee has adhered to a tradition of protecting whistleblowers. However, it's my understanding that your participation in President Trump's campaign to punish and discredit one IC whistleblower suggests you do not align yourself with this bipartisan approach. Let me give you an example. During a December 11 hearing of the House Committee on the Judiciary, you claimed without any evidence that the whistleblower got caught making a false statement. On December 12th, you tweeted that the whistleblower didn't tell the truth, both verbally and in writing. You also attacked HPSI staff for providing guidance to potential whistleblowers on how to lawfully make a disclosure. Here's the question. If you are confirmed, do you believe that your past remarks concerning the Ukraine whistleblower will discourage IC whistleblowers from exercising their rights, consistent with the law, to make protected disclosures?
Senator, thanks for the question. I want to make it very clear, if confirmed as DNI, every whistleblower, past, present, and future, will enjoy every protection under the law. I don't want to relitigate old issues of what happened during the impeachment inquiry. My issue was not with the whistleblower. My issue was with what I perceived as a lack of due process in the House process. Again, I don't want to relitigate the issue, so I'll leave it at that. But every whistleblower can expect full protection under the law. Whistleblowers are so important. A whistleblower in doctor in China is one of the reasons we got an earlier warning. So I'll make that commitment to you, Senator.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. On the evening of April 3rd, President Trump announced that he was firing Mr. Atkinson because he had sought to transmit to Congress a credible whistleblower complaint of urgent concern, one that was required by law to be transmitted to Congress. Do you share the belief of members of this committee and the Senate that Mr. Atkinson was improperly fired, despite the fact, as Acting Director McGuire said, he did everything by the book and followed the law?
Well, Senator, I appreciate the question. And I think before you entered the room, I talked about my history and strong support of working with Inspector Generals. I talked about Inspector General Horowitz, who is someone I went to when I thought there was a problem with the misuse of intelligence authorities. And very much appreciated his approach and work, and some of the concerns that I raised were presented in his findings and his report. With respect to Inspector General Atkinson and the situation that you described, I don't have enough information to answer your question, and if I can explain why, I will tell you that my dealings with Inspector General Atkinson, I had no issues. I think he did what he thought was right. I think he did think that he was following the law. The flip side to that is that the legal opinion within the ODNI from the General Counsel and from the Department of Justice Office of Legal Counsel, my reading of it is that their determination was that he may have exceeded his authority because the investigation involved issues that were not intelligence activities or intelligence community employees. That's a legal question that I don't know the answer to. Again, I very much want to reiterate that if confirmed, how important inspector generals are in government and my strong history of working with them. And I understand, although he's in an acting capacity, that Inspector General Tom Monheim is in that role. I don't know him, but he's a 30-year veteran, very well respected, so I hope to have the opportunity to work with him.
Thank you. I appreciate that answer. If concerned, do you commit to directing all IC agencies to cooperate fully with congressional oversight requests regarding COVID-19 and to promptly produce the full membership and staff of the Congressional Intelligence Committees, all intelligence requested by Congress regarding COVID-19?
Senator, thanks for the question.
And that's meant to be broad.
It is, and I appreciate the question. And in my opening remarks, and then I think reiterating in one of my responses, that the immediate concern that I have is getting answers from the American people through the intelligence community, if confirmed. The intelligence community will be laser-focused on getting all of the answers that we can regarding how this happened, when this happened, and I commit to providing with as much transparency to you as the law will allow, and with due regard for sources and methods, that everything be provided as quickly as possible.
Thank you. Just a couple of questions quickly about hard targets. In your view, is the IC doing enough to collect against hard targets like North Korea?
Senator, as you know, the challenge with North Korea is visibility. And I think that my impression from the outside, like you as a member of an oversight committee of intelligence, is that we have very good collection. I'm only caveating it because if confirmed as DNI, I may have a different viewpoint or more information to look at. I would make it a priority I think collection, obviously, and analysis of our intelligence is what makes this the greatest intelligence enterprise in the world. And I will commit that if we are not doing enough, Senator, I will make it a high priority to improve any standards that we may need to employ.
I think the most fundamental question is why is this a job that you are willing to step forward and do at this time?
And I think everyone knows that the relationship between the intelligence community, Congress, the president, and across the board right now is something that's at issue. We've got intelligence authorities and their uses being questioned. I realize it's a sort of a difficult time, but DNI, again, the core responsibility is leadership, and it's easy to raise your hand when things are going perfectly. It's harder to raise your hand when they're not, and the mission's too important of keeping Americans safe, and the opportunity to lead is something that I want to do, and I guess I will say this. It's been the privilege of my life to serve as a member of Congress, but the best job I ever had was to be the United States Attorney, and what I loved about it was an apolitical position. I stood up always to represent the United States of America, never one party or another. And I very, very much view that as this role for the DNI. I look forward to treating every member, Republican and Democrat, exactly the same way, and frankly, being out of politics.
What is it in what you have done over the last, during your career that you believe prepares you best for the role you now have of sort of overseeing all of these different pillars of our intelligence capabilities?
Well, I think as was mentioned earlier, I've now seen intelligence from three different vantage points, as an end user and a developer, as a consumer of intelligence, and as an overseer of intelligence. And as far as experience, I started handling national security issues back in 2005, and that included intelligence authorities. My first exposure with FISA was 2005, and in trying to respond to this committee, we found that in at least one instance, the authorities that I used remain, or the matters that I work on remain classified. So from an experience standpoint, as far back as 2005, I've been using those authorities. But I think the role of U.S. Attorney in particular and my time as Chief of Anti-Terrorism for 4 years is particularly well-suited and analogous to the DNI. So as U.S. Attorney, I was running a federated enterprise, working across federal agencies, integrating, coordinating, sharing information, and doing so in an apolitical way. And that's very much what the Director of National Intelligence does, integrates and coordinates across all 17 intelligence agencies, making the community better so that it can make members of Congress, the President, and our policymakers better informed on national security decisions. My time in Congress as well, the committees that I've been on, legislating, creating national security laws, I think I've got a broad, deep, and more than qualified level of experience when we talk about national security issues. And I also think I've got good judgment because I've identified when there are problems with the use of intelligence authorities, and I've spoken truth to power when I've seen it misused.
Senator Feinstein?
If I could ask one question, that's something that I have followed, try to cure. I've been very concerned by the growth of contractors over the last 20-plus years in the agencies. And when I was chairman of the committee, we made a big push to ensure that all inherently government functions of the IC were performed by government employees and not contractors. It's my understanding that that effort continues today, and we made substantial progress over the two decades in this. What is your view on the appropriate use of contractors in the intelligence community?
Senator, I'm not saying this because you're considering me for the position as the nominee, but I agree with every word you just said with regard to contractor use and how it should be limited and where government employees should be doing government functions. I know there's always a look in terms of ratios and the percentages. I'm not a one-size-fits-all person. If confirmed as DNI, I'll look at where things stand right now. But the concern that you have, the sentiment that you expressed, let me just reiterate that I agree with you completely and look forward to working with you on this issue if confirmed.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Collins.
As some members have already said today, the ability to speak truth to power is essential to serving as a successful DNI. Would you communicate the intelligence community's analytic views to the president, even if you knew that he would strongly disagree with them?
Of course.
Would you be willing to communicate the IC's analytic conclusions to the president, even if you believed it would place your job in jeopardy?
Of course.
When, assuming your confirmation, when you participate in the next open worldwide threats hearing, and you are asked to provide an unclassified IC assessment that you know that the president vehemently disagrees with, what would you do?
Senator, whether you're talking about the president, whether you're talking about Nancy Pelosi, Mitch McConnell, anyone's views on what they want the intelligence to be will never impact the intelligence that I deliver. Never.
Thank you for that strong response. I'm nevertheless going to ask you one more that has to do with the internal operations of the intelligence community. What would you do if the intelligence community was prepared to publish a president's daily brief that directly contradicted the White House's conclusions on an important issue like North Korea? Would you still allow the PDB to be published? And the reason I ask this question is there are some very experienced analysts within the IC that are concerned that you might attempt to shade the conclusions in order to avoid alienating the president in presenting his daily brief.
Senator, I think before you were in the room, I've reiterated multiple times that I won't shade intelligence for anyone, whether we're talking about the president, members of Congress, any policymakers. As far as published on the president's daily brief, I guess I'm not sure the word publish when you say how you mean that.
I should have used the word issued.
So absolutely. I just want to make sure because the president's daily brief is the president's daily
right.
brief. And to the larger question, again, just if I can reiterate as clearly as possible, if confirmed as DNI, one of the things that I've made clear to everyone is that I will deliver the unvarnished truth. It won't be shaded for anyone. What anyone wants the intelligence to reflect won't impact the intelligence that I deliver.
And finally, and I asked this question to you on the telephone, but I want to ask it to you for the record. The president has said that the IC has run amok and needs to be reined in. Do you share the president's view?
I think what we talked about, Senator, about a number of things there. I'm sure going to get a lot of questions about what the president says or what the president thinks. And I don't mean to be repetitive, but none of those things, regardless of what he says or how he says them, or how Nancy Pelosi or Mitch McConnell or anyone says about the intelligence or the intelligence community, will not impact the intelligence that I deliver.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Congressman, Welcome, and
thank you.
Let me begin this way. Donald Trump said last year, the Constitution says, and I quote here, I can do whatever I want as president. The Attorney General has said the president doesn't have to follow the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act and can conduct surveillance without a warrant. Those two statements are a direct threat to the constitutional rights of Americans, and it makes the Director of National Intelligence a last line of defense for our democracy. Do you believe the president can spy on Americans outside the law? And I would like—
Senator, I don't think anyone can spy on Americans outside the law.
So would you refuse to authorize the intelligence community to conduct warrantless surveillance?
Senator,
You answered no. So I'm asking you—
Just be real clear. My answer is consistent. Whatever the law is what I will do as if confirmed as DNI. Within my authorities, I will act within my authorities, but most importantly, I will be guided by the Constitution and the rule of law. So whatever authorities allow the intelligence community to do, all of our actions, if I'm the director, will be in compliance with what the law is.
My time is short.
I'm sorry.
Congressman, the point is you really didn't say no in answer to my question. You said there may be circumstances. I happen to think that answer, that there may be circumstances when the president can spy on Americans outside the law, is an exceptionally dangerous bit of testimony.
Maybe
I'm gonna move on.
Maybe can I just, because the record's clear, maybe I misspoke then. I want to be real clear that no one can spy or surveil outside the law, and it's, if confirmed as DNI, one of my highest priorities will always be to make sure that the intelligence community is acting in accordance with the law. So I want to make that very clear, Senator.
If the Inspector General determines that a whistleblower complaint should be sent to Congress, are you going to send it over to the Department of Justice or the White House to get their permission?
Any whistleblower complaint, if I'm confirmed as DNI, is going to be handled in accordance with the law. I don't know how I can be more clear than that.
Oh, I think you could say unequivocally no, because that's what I think is important. And what I want to know is whether there's some kind of veto power over whether Congress hears from whistleblowers. And as with the previous question with respect to spying, you want to have it both ways. You want to try to portray yourself as a defender of the Constitution, and then you water it down with the specifics. Should the identity of whistleblowers ever, under any circumstances, be disclosed without their consent?
No, whistleblowers are entitled to anonymity.
So what is your opinion of those who would call for the outing of IC whistleblowers?
That whistleblowers are entitled to anonymity under the law. And if someone...
Are you distinguishing between lawful whistleblowers or lawful whistleblower complaints? Again, I'm trying to get a sense of what you actually believe.
If someone is a whistleblower under the law, they are entitled to the protections of whistleblower statute under the law. And before you were in the room,
I heard the answer. One last question, I want to get it in. You, in your written answers, seem to think internet voting was okay. You gave a very qualified answer. I happen to think it's the equivalent of putting our ballots on the streets of Moscow. So could you tell me why you think internet voting is okay given all the threats that we have seen to our democracy?
I don't recall the response or how I responded, Senator, but It seems to me that that is a policy issue that if confirmed as DNI, I would not be in the role of making policy. It wouldn't matter. Whatever the law is regarding...
We expect you to be a leader on election security.
Can you give me some specific examples of when you've had to speak truth to power, in particular if it's involved the President of the United States?
One of the reasons that I indicated before you were in the room that I wanted this job was because it is apolitical, and I have held apolitical positions before. As U.S. Attorney, that is an apolitical role, and in those instances, I frequently had to speak truth to power from the standpoint of there were many occasions where people wanted me to exercise my discretion in a way that considered something other than what the law was, and
you,
I never did.
Can you give a particular example?
So-and-so is, you know, I don't want to give examples that would give away a specific case, but if someone was, for instance, a good Republican or a good Democrat and held a position and maybe deserved some special consideration, those kinds of things.
Gotcha.
In addition, I
think that's adequate. Do you think that the intelligence community or even a single agency has run amok?
I have never said that.
President Trump has repeatedly, and without any basis in my view, accused the hardworking men and women of the IC of working to undermine his administration. Do you believe that there is a quote-unquote deep state in the IC?
I don't know what that means. Senator Collins and I think talked about that in our call. I don't know what that is.
So would you agree that it would be inappropriate and in some context illegal to remove or reassign, to screen or otherwise discriminate against career IC personnel for political reasons, including
yes.
on the basis of their work assignments in previous administrations?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. The president has publicly stated that he expects loyalty from his appointees, and he publicly withdrew your nomination, appointed another individual, but then formally resubmitted your nomination. That sort of turn of events just raises some unique questions. During your conversations with the president regarding this position, what priorities did he communicate to you that he expected you to pursue on his behalf? And did the word loyalty ever come up?
Senator, a couple of points there. I want to be real clear. My loyalty is to the Constitution and the rule of law, and I have made that very clear to everyone, including the president.
So you did discuss loyalty?
No, I've made clear that if I'm in a position, my loyalty is always going to be to the Constitution and rule of law.
So you made that proactively clear. You weren't asked.
I made that proactively clear.
And you were not asked.
And I was not. Okay. I absolutely was not asked.
Thank you.
The priorities, one of the priorities, again, I don't want to get into specific conversations, but the sentiment is keeping politics out of the intelligence community. It's one of my priorities. And one thing, I guess, because it's been reported, I withdrew from consideration. I wasn't withdrawn. And so I just wanted the record clear with respect to that.
Senator Wyden, one additional question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Congressman, the Congress passed a law requiring an unclassified report on who was responsible for the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. This is a law today, not a bill. It is a law. The DNI, however, has outright refused to comply with this law, denying the public a single shred of information on this topic. Do you agree that the government is bound by this law and is obligated to provide this report, which stipulates in public, who killed Jamal Khashoggi and under what circumstances?
Senator, I share your concern. I think I've seen the same information that you have, and I think you're referring to the provisions in the NDAA. And if confirmed as DNI, I will ensure that that the law is complied with. I realize that the information, I think, in the report, if we're talking about the same thing, is a request for unclassified information. So if confirmed, I want to look myself at the information to make sure that that information has been classified properly.
Senator Heinrich, do you have an additional question?
Just one. As you know, Congress has not authorized organizational changes at ODNI. We have not appropriated funds for that purpose, but Acting Director Grinnell has been reorganizing ODNI. If confirmed, would you halt that reorganization, and would you seek authorization from Congress to reorganize if you found the need to do so?
Senator, I appreciate the question about organizational changes. As you know, I'm not so presumptuous as to know that I'm going to be confirmed, so I haven't considered or talked about any sort of organizational changes. I want to make clear that it's been that I expect to have unfettered discretion to make all personnel decisions if confirmed as DNI, and I'll make them in the best interest of the IC to make the IC better. And I will certainly, as with everything, work with this committee to keep it fully and currently informed. I want everyone to sort of remember that I'm being considered for this position, but I'm one of you right now as a member of an oversight committee, and America functions better when its elected representatives are fully informed by the intelligence community, and I intend to do that.
With that, I recognize Senator Blunt.
To comment on your views, maybe as a House Intel member, of just the size of DNI itself, and if that size is one you think is too big, too small, or just right.
Senator, thank you for the remarks and the association with former Attorney General John Ashcroft, who's a great American. But I, like you, come into this position, if confirmed, with some preconceived impressions based on discussions I've had on the Oversight Committee. And as Senator Collins leaves the room, I want to make sure, one of the goals of the DNI, if confirmed, is to make sure that the ODNI and the DNI position are working exactly like Senator Collins and those who stood it up intended it. And so I had a chance to visit with her about it. Like you, I come in with the perspective that you have conversations that maybe indicate that there is too much bureaucracy and there's too much redundancy. Some redundancy is good, but if there are 17 agencies, they don't need to be doing the same thing 17 times or purchasing the same things. And so it'll be one of my immediate priorities to assess how the ODNI is functioning. The goal of the ODNI is to make the IC better so that the IC can make you better and the president better and policymakers better. And so I do think that I want it to be as efficient as possible, but I'll be thoughtful and talk with the heads of the intelligence agencies and elements to find out where they think that some of these things may just be unnecessary redundancies and address those.
Talk a little bit about rebalancing the resources you have to continue to keep an eye on the threats that we have so focused on for almost two decades now, but also to rebalance into the great power competition that we see as a significant challenge for us today.
Senator, great question, and I appreciate you asking, because I've had that conversation with a lot of people about what I view as the greatest threat and the greatest threat actor, and I view China as the greatest threat actor right now. I mean, look at where we are with respect to COVID-19 and the role that China plays, the race to 5G, cybersecurity issues, all roads lead to China there. And so one of the priorities, highest priorities that I'll have if confirmed as DNI, is to make sure, and again, my background with regard to, you know, violent extremists, you know, that is a generational challenge that we will continue to deal with. We may forget about them, but they don't forget about us. But I agree with you in terms of making sure, as we look at the national intelligence framework and whether we're committing enough resources to the rising power that is China. When you look at the initiatives that they have, the Belt and Road, the Made in China 2025, the all of the military civil fusion initiative, where they literally want by law Chinese companies to collect intelligence. These are all spokes of the same initiative, and that's for China to supplant us as the world's superpower and to be able to set standards around the world. And we very clearly don't want an authoritarian regime like the Chinese Communist Party setting standards in the world marketplace. And so I look forward to sitting down with you, if confirmed, about how ODNI and the other 16 elements are dedicated to the rising threat that is China, which I view as our greatest threat actor.
Good morning, Congressman. First, I'd like to start with a series of questions that were from the questionnaire, and I believe they can be answered with yes or no. You did not answer them thusly in the questionnaire, but I think they can be easily answered with yes or no. The first one is question 35. Would you ever ask, encourage, or support an intelligence professional adjusting his or her assessment to avoid criticism from the White House or political appointees?
No.
Would you ever change or remove content in an intelligence assessment for political reasons or at the behest of political leadership?
No.
Question 39, would you consider an individual's personal political preferences to include loyalty to the president in making a decision to hire, fire, or promote an individual?
No.
And question 39, B, do you commit to exclusively consider professional qualifications in IC personnel decisions without consideration of partisan or political factors?
Yes.
C of 39, if you were to receive credible evidence as DNI that an individual was undermining IC objectivity and furthering a political agenda, would you immediately remove that individual?
Yes.
And D, will you or any of your staff impose a political litmus test for IC employees?
No.
And finally, if confirmed, would you reassure your workforce that loyalty tests are not allowed with the IC?
I would.
And if such occurs, would you commit to informing Congressional Intelligence Committees and immediately stopping such efforts?
I would.
Thank you. Next question. Can you give me a case where you have ever publicly differed with this president?
Yes.
Please do. Briefly.
Example I can think of most recently was, I think it was October, the president's decision to withdraw troops from Syria. There was a resolution considered regarding that issue that I supported, that I think was referred to by some as a rebuke of the president. I think I'm right on the specifics of that.
Any other incidents?
I'm sure there are. I don't recall any as I'm sitting here.
In your position as a member of the House Intelligence Committee or as the nominee for DNI, have you seen any intelligence that finds with high confidence, or any confidence for that matter, that the coronavirus originated in a lab in Wuhan rather than the market?
I have not.
Thank you. You
can
testified.
Can I
go ahead?
I only wanted to caveat in the sense of because of the pandemic, I want to say that the last classified briefing I had was sometime in it's been a while since I've had a classified briefing on the coronavirus pandemic. That's the only
exactly
thing I wanted to caveat.
That's the answer that I gave this morning myself.
Okay.
And you, like me, you have not seen any intelligence product that indicates.
I have not.
Thank you. You took the oath this morning from the chair and said you will agree to appear and share information with the committee. Will you appear before this committee if the president or an official in the White House tells you not to?
Of course.
You will bring us, I think there's been some discussion of the worldwide threat hearing. You gave the right answer. If I were you, I wouldn't qualify.
Then I'll just leave it alone. But the point was, I want to make sure we were talking about to appear in connection with a worldwide threat hearing.
No, I'm talking about just generally. If this committee requests your attendance to testify and the White House says do not go, will you honor the oath you took this morning?
I will. I will. I'm sorry. I want to make sure that I understood the question properly.
Thank you. The president has stated that he feels that so-called enhanced interrogation, such as waterboarding, has value and produces valuable results. John McCain has said repeatedly that it does not. Who do you agree with, McCain or the president?
I follow the law, always follow the law. And so what
you
the
believe
law
that
says,
waterboarding is a violation of the anti-torture law?
My understanding that the law makes clear in several places that torture is illegal, and that would be the finding, I think, in the Army field manual. And
so this has nothing to do with your personal opinion. You're simply saying I'll follow the law, but if the law was changed to allow waterboarding or other forms of torture, would you say that was okay?
I think the obligation that I have, Senator, is to follow the law. The Constitution and law of the country is the oath that I take in any role, as DNI, as a member of Congress. I mean, I don't want to get into policy decisions about which the DNI should not be involved in. I'm a policymaker now, but you're considering me for a role where I would not be making policy, or I would follow the law as legislators create laws or as the Supreme Court interprets those laws.
Thank you. One final question. If you were running for re-election and your campaign manager shared polling data, which included crosstabs and detailed information about where your campaign stood, with an agent of a foreign government, would you believe that was okay?
No.
Thank you.
Much of what we know about the virus is the result of publicly reported information or social media evidence from Wuhan in the early days and so forth. How critical is the role of that kind of unclassified public information in the analysis that our Intelligence Committee should be conducting?
It's, I think, vitally important. I think one of the things that we're seeing is OSINT, or, you know, open source intelligence, is increasingly valuable, and we need to find ways to make sure that we're collecting it and analyzing it. It's a huge, because it's large sets of data that we need to be processing there. And so it's a challenge, but it's a tremendous source of information and should be utilized by the intelligence community going forward.
I couldn't agree more. I think there's always a bias towards thinking if a secret is not stolen through clandestine means, then it's not valuable information. When all of these pieces of information, whether we're talking about the Chinese coronavirus or what Russia is up to in Europe or Iran's nuclear program, stitched together into a mosaic. And that mosaic usually is a question of circumstantial evidence that you can use common sense to reach the best conclusion, not direct evidence, not conclusive proof. You want to respond?
I was just going to say, to give you an example of how we might sort of forward-looking on this issue, open source intelligence, if we used open source intelligence tools, we may be able to get earlier warnings around pandemics like this or viruses like this as they're beginning. So those are the types of, when I was referring to how the intelligence community can leverage open source information, that's what I was referring to.
Last week, the acting director of National Intelligence released a statement saying The intelligence community will continue to rigorously examine emerging information and intelligence to determine whether the outbreak began through contact with infected animals or if it was a result of an accident at a laboratory in Wuhan. The New York Times subsequently reported that senior National Security Council officials urged the intelligence community to collect additional information to the extent possible on the origin and cause of the Wuhan pandemic. The New York Times and other media outlets have somehow suggested that would be inappropriate. Is it inappropriate for the president to set collection priorities on what he thinks is urgent national questions and for you as DNI to drive those priorities as best you can, given the facts that our intelligence officers are able to gather?
That would be appropriate.
Senator Harris.
Congressman, the U.S. intelligence community has an important role in warning our leaders about pandemics like COVID-19, because outbreaks, of course, are not just a public health matter, but also a matter of national security. Based on public statements and reporting alone, do you believe that President Trump has accurately conveyed the severity of the threat of COVID-19 to the American people?
Are you saying presently?
We are in the midst of the pandemic presently, correct?
Right. So repeat the question, because I guess I'm misunderstanding. I'm sorry. Has he accurately reflected the status of the pandemic?
Conveyed the severity of the pandemic, yes. Has he accurately conveyed the severity of COVID-19 to the American people?
I believe so.
You do. What would you do if confirmed? If you believed the president was not taking the warnings from the intelligence community seriously?
Senator, the intelligence that that I would deliver as the director of national intelligence, the statements that the president said this, none of those things will influence the intelligence that I deliver to this committee and the committee in the House and members of Congress. I made the point in my opening, this is one of the highest, the first priorities is getting answers to the American people who deserve answers, and you do as a member of the Oversight Committee, and I do if I'm still a member of the Oversight Committee. And whatever those answers are, Senator, you will get them. They won't be shaded, regardless of what anyone says. I will say this, one of the things that I've learned as a nominee is that members of the intelligence community will tell you things that they wouldn't tell you as an overseer of intelligence. And the thing that I want to make clear to all the members here is the concern of the men and women in the intelligence community is they don't want to be leveraged by anyone on either side of the aisle.
With all due respect, sir, in my experience being on the Intelligence Committee of the United States Senate, the intelligence community has been pretty forthright with us when we ask them questions in our role of oversight. So what exactly are you referring to?
I'm just saying in the perspective as the conversations that I've had over the past few months as I've been considered for this, I've had exposure to a lot of intelligence community members who have just expressed the sentiment that they want to do their job, they want to deliver the best intelligence, and they don't want to be leveraged from anyone on either side of the aisle. That was the only point. I wasn't directed at you, Senator, at all.
Oh, no, I didn't take it that way.
Okay.
Okay. And then in our fourth report on Russian interference into the 2016 election, this committee has once again reaffirmed the unanimous consensus of 17 intelligence agencies that Russia interfered with the aim of benefiting then-candidate Trump's political campaign. However, you and other allies of the president have sought to cast doubt on the consensus conclusions, raising concerns for many of us about your ability to be unbiased, which is a necessity to head the DNI. Will you accept the intelligence provided to you by the men and women of the intelligence community, no matter your personal beliefs? And do you accept the findings of the intelligence community as it relates to the Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election?
So to your first question, I will accept. To the second question about specific to Russia 2017,
2016.
I'm sorry, 2016. Earlier in the, I made the point that I respect both committees. I think there's a difference of opinion between the House Intelligence Committee and this committee in terms of one specific finding. I wasn't on the, as you pointed out, I was not on the House Intelligence Committee at the time of that. I respect both committees, but I haven't seen the underlying intelligence with respect to that one finding.
You touched on a point with Senator Cotton that I'd like to follow up that I think is critically important, and the term I use is conclusion shopping. It's in the nature of any executive to want to be told that the intelligence supports whatever policy direction they want to go in. And this is a constant struggle. It goes back. I don't care whether the president is John F. Kennedy in Vietnam or Lyndon Johnson in Vietnam or George W. Bush at weapons of mass destruction. This is a human nature problem. The king said, "Who will rid me of this meddlesome priest?" And a couple of knights went and killed Becket. The president doesn't have to give an order. That's my concern, and that's where it worries me that the president apparently has been pressing the intelligence community to find what he wants them to find. The question should be, where did the virus come from? Not, don't you think it came from a lab? Do you see the distinction I'm trying to make and why this is so crucial? And it's crucial to the president, him or herself, because if they taint the intelligence before it gets to them, they're going to make bad decisions. And we're protecting the president themselves by guarding against this human nature problem. Every executive wants to hear what they want to hear. Every person that works for that executive wants to tell the boss what they want to hear. Talk to me about this concern. I think this is a critical issue, particularly with a president who is so strong-willed and has indicated in the past a strong desire to press the intelligence community to tell him what he wants to hear.
Well, Senator, I appreciate the question, and I appreciate the fact that we had a chance to visit about this on the phone, and you've made it clear that this is one aspect of politicization of the intelligence community, sometimes that happens even unintentionally.
Absolutely.
And I share the sentiment or the concern generally. And I've tried to make it clear in our conversations or our conversation about that I agree with the sentiment and how I intend to approach this. I can't comment on things that haven't happened yet. I'm trying to make clear my approach to how I will deal with the issue. And I think I've been very clear that what anyone wants the intelligence to say won't impact the intelligence they get from me that I deliver.
I want to turn to myself for one additional question for the congressman, and then I'll turn to the vice chairman for one additional question before we turn to our last block. Congressman, your experience on the House Intelligence Committee has illustrated the importance of comprehensive oversight. Part of that oversight is being able to dig into the finished intelligence products. For those of us that have been on the Intel Committee prior to 9/11, we understood what processing raw intelligence was really like because we didn't have finished product. Do you commit to the committee that in the rare instances that the committee asks for raw intelligence to better understand the analytical conclusions that have been determined, that you will provide that raw intelligence for the committee?
I will, as appropriate. And I'm caveating just to the standpoint of within my authority and with due regard for the sources and methods at the time.
Absolutely. Lastly, technological innovation is increasingly happening overseas. The Vice Chairman and I have been incredibly active on the issue of 5G, not because of the jurisdiction of the committee, but because the Intelligence Committee, both in the House and the Senate, is unique in the fact that we see trends before the policy committees do. And we also see the tech side of it, the technology side of it, in a way that would take other committees of jurisdiction months, if not years, to get the same understanding without the degree of clarity that the Intelligence Committee gets it. What's your view on how the intelligence community should engage with the private sector on technological innovation?
Well, I think it's a great question. It ties into what you said, the issue of 5G and where that race stands right now, and the where you know rising powers like China are with regard to the development of 5G, you know, global networks, and our ability to ensure that interconnected global networks are safe really will demand, consistent with the 5G strategy and Senator Cornyn's bill that's now a law with regard to that, that we work harder to work with the private sector and take advantage of the technology expertise that we need there to make sure that we're first in all of these places. When we talk about emerging technologies, Chairman, you know, we have the best intelligence and enterprise in the world. To continue for that to be the case, we've got to continue to innovate, and we've got to be first. We've got to be first and best on cyber issues, on AI, on ultimately on quantum. But 5G is where we are with regard to that issue now, and it's the pathway to being first in those areas. And so, again, it's something that's vitally important, and that's my perspective.
Thank you. Vice Chairman.
I think a couple of my colleagues have raised some of the questions about the President's comments about his notion that there is somehow a deep state in the intelligence community or within law enforcement that is somehow going against his wishes. Have you ever made any statements about a deep state within the intelligence community and or statements that...
Not that I'm aware of, Senator. The only reason I'm hesitating is sometimes you're asked questions by reporters about using terms, and so it's not a term that I...
But have you made any statements saying that you believe or implying that the intelligence community is somehow acting inappropriately to target the president?
No.
And do you have any view on how the intelligence community professionals, what kind of effect that would have on the morale of folks who are hearing these kind of accusations?
The effect on morale.
If the commander in chief is making comments saying, somehow impugning the integrity of the intelligence community professionals, that they're somehow part of some secret cabal acting against him. Would you agree that has some negative effects upon the community's, you know, kind of esprit de corps and morale?
My impression, Senator, from I can only speak to the conversations that I've had without getting into specifics. I think the sentiment that I've heard from the president is it's not intelligence community writ large. It's specific individuals and pointing to, for instance, misuse of intelligence authorities by certain individuals. Again, my focus is I want to look forward, not back. I think that's one of the reasons I want this opportunity. All of this underscores the point that the relationship isn't what it should be across the board between the intelligence community, the president, and Congress and its oversight committees. And again, it may be difficult, but I'd like the opportunity to strengthen that relationship.
Senator Bennett.
And will you protect the intelligence committee at all costs?
Yes.
Including at the cost of your own job?
Yes.
We face a situation now, you're inheriting an agency where the president fired the IC Inspector General, Michael Akeson, because he didn't like the way the IG did his job. How are we going to undo that? How specifically are you going to deal with the impact of the Inspector General being fired because the president disagreed with the way he did his job? He did his job according to the law.
So,
do you think there's collateral damage as a result of an action taken like that?
Well, I don't know until I'm confirmed what the reaction is, within the community.
What would you suspect it would be?
Well, I honestly don't know what the to your point about the Inspector General. Again, I want to relitigate issues, but
I don't think this is relitigating issues. This is what the President of the United States is projecting to the men and women of our intelligence agents. If the President says this afternoon that the intelligence agencies in this country are running amok, will you publicly disagree with the President?
I will give the President my best intelligence, unvarnished. I don't know if I'm not, we're not, I'm not understanding how I'm not answering
I think
question.
that would meet the Ashcroft test. I think that if you couldn't do it without, if you couldn't bring yourself to say that the men and women of the intelligence agencies, communities are not running amok, I don't think you'd meet the test.
I'm trying, just to be clear, Senator, I don't think that the men and women of the intelligence community are running amok.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Sias.
I'm going to ask you some more questions to press you on whether you think the ODNI works right now, whether it's a functioning bureaucratic layer or whether it's an encumbrance, whether the post-9/11 reasons that it were created are actually being advanced. But one of the specific pieces of that we'll talk about in a classified setting that I want to unpack more fully here is, you know, it's my view, there's no more pressing national security threat the United States faces than the next decade of the tech race with China. And all 17 of our intelligence agencies, but especially the CIA and the NSA, are getting that message, and they're ramping it up. But we've been talking about a pivot to China for 10 or 15 years in this country, and I think the agencies are still slow to devote sufficient mindshare, money, personnel, et cetera, to the China threat. So in this public setting, a rare thing for the intelligence community, where you get to speak directly to the American people, can you explain what the Made in China 2025 initiative is and why China's pursuing it and whether the American people should be concerned?
Sure. Thanks for the question, Senator. And you and I have talked, and earlier I identified China as the greatest threat that we face, the greatest threat actor that we face moving forward for the exact reasons that you've talked about. Made in China 2025 is one of only a few, is one of many initiatives that the Chinese government, the Belt and Road initiative, the military-civil fusion initiative, the all initiatives of the same, or all spokes of the same initiative for China to supplant us as the global power in all respects. And so, it's why I think you and I agree that China is the rising threat, and why we have to look at the national intelligence policy framework and our budgeting and our resource allocation to make sure that we're dedicating towards all of these different initiatives where an authoritarian regime wants to set the marketplace rules, as they do with Made in China 2025, where they want Chinese companies dominating industry across 10 different sectors, just as they want with the military fusion, Chinese companies gathering and collecting intelligence and sharing it with the Chinese Communist Party, whereas with Belt and Road, they want to dominate all of the hubs for trade routes and telecommunications. All of these things are China trying to essentially supplant free marketplace standards and values like liberty and free speech and all of the things that we have with authoritarian values that are reflected in some of the things that are happening in this COVID-19 pandemic.
But what is the Communist Party trying to do with tech and with AI in particular?
So we'll use an example, because I'll start with 5G, because 5G leads to AI, AI leads to quantum. And to your point about where the Chinese Communist Party stops and starts, it's hard to tell with a company like Huawei. And if Huawei has an obligation to share information under Chinese law with the Chinese Communist Party, and they are creating global networks, and our information is going over those lines, and our allies that we're sharing information with, that's jeopardizing our information, it's jeopardizing our troops. All of these things are basically put at risk with respect to that. And so, you know, again, this is just why you are so correct, Senator, in terms of making sure that we are balanced in terms of where we are investing in terms of the global threat landscape, pandemic, you know, 5G, AI, I don't want to say all roads to lead to China, but a lot of them do.
What are the technical fields that you're most concerned about them being at or equal to us in terms of their long-term plotting against us a generation? I think Eric Schmidt, the former executive chairman of Google, regularly talks about a tech generation as being 18-ish months. What tech fields are you most, technical fields, are you most concerned about their near parity arrival with us?
Yeah, so, I mean, just in terms of the, you know, the point, cybersecurity generally, tying in, I mentioned 5G, but one of the things that I'm most concerned about is investment towards quantum computing. We have in the, with the NSA, we have the best code makers and breakers in the world. General Nakasone, I think you and I agree, is a national treasure. But if China gets to quantum first, we're in trouble. And so that for me is one of the, when we look at investments and looking forward and the challenges that we face and the fact that China's investing more towards those technologies than the United States presently, we need to rebalance.
Senator Reid.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Welcome, Congressman.
Thank you.
In your view, have we made progress in reversing North Korea's nuclear proliferation and nuclear development?
I view North Korea as the same danger that that they have been. I understand and I appreciate the diplomatic negotiations that are taking place, and I hope that you know that there might be some concessions about their nuclear weapons in exchange for sanctions relief. But I can't address whether or not we've made progress with respect to that or not. You know, given the class the information that I've been privy to at this point, perhaps it, you know, if confirmed as DNI, and I had a chance to visit with Secretary Pompeo, and because I think there's a diplomatic piece here that I don't know that I don't know the answer to.
Changing subject now for Iran, were they in compliance with the JCPOA when the president withdrew?
I'm not sure. I might have to. I don't know technically if they were out of compliance at the time.
Well, since that time, do you think their activities have become more malign since the withdrawal by the United States from the JCPOA?
I think Iran has become increasingly desperate as a result of the maximum pressure campaign, and I think that that's reflected in the fact that we see more provoking activity from them. Not just, you know, when you talk about Iran, you have to really look across. You're talking about Yemen, you're talking about Syria, you're talking about their proxies around. It's a regional issue, and they're getting more aggressive everywhere because I think that they're increasingly more desperate. The internal strife that is going on in that regime, one of the common ways to deal with the internal conflict that's happening is to try and coalesce around an outside adversary, and U.S. and our interests in that region provide that. That's how they're trying to maintain control. I will say this, Senator. I think that this is one of the things when I talk about the impacts of a COVID-19 pandemic, where in places all around the world, but in the Middle East, where you already have social unrest and a chance for upheaval, those conditions can get sharper. Where you have what we believe is, you know, underreporting in Iran with respect to the impact of COVID-19.
But from your comments, the maximum pressure campaign has made them more hostile, more aggressive, and more disruptive.
I think they're more desperate is how I would characterize it. What they're trying to do, and from my perspective, is to, you know, leverage the international community to provoke something that draws into something that might provide relief from the crippling sanctions that they're under.
Let me change subject to something that's been discussed several times here. That's election security. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, you would concede that in 2016 the Russians were involved.
Yes.
In 2018 the Russians were involved.
Yes.
In 2020, this election, they are involved.
Yes.
The Senate Intelligence Committee on a bipartisan basis concluded in 2016 they were in favor of supporting President Trump and in disfavor of Secretary Clinton and taking steps to promote one and to deter the other. Yet in your written response to the Intelligence Committee, you did not publicly commit to notifying the American public when you had critical information of Russian involvement. And I think as a fundamental aspect of democracy, people should know when they go into a voting booth who's doing what candidates are being supported by who. Now that's something that goes back, I think, to the beginning of this democracy. And yet you would not commit to that public notification. You would say, you instead mentioned the need to safeguard the confidentiality interest of the executive branch, which is basically to cover the president's position. Is that your position?
I'm not sure the question. I've answered, I think, 150 different questions. I want to be real clear about Russia and other countries, but Russia in particular. I agree with at the way you've they interfered 2016, 2018, 2020. They're going to continue to do it. I'm for safe, secure, credible elections, and would do everything I can as DNI to ensure that they are not successful. So I don't know the question and answer in specific that you're referring to, but if I need to elaborate or clarify.
Well, I think you should review your written responses because the quote is, safeguard the confidentiality interests of the executive branch will be considered, which sounds a lot like the president comes first, and then if it doesn't really bother him, then I'll let it go.
That was certainly not my intent, and I'll reiterate that I think I've made clear throughout.
You will publicly commit to disclosing to the American people if the intelligence community concurs with high confidence that the Russians are involved and the Russians are involved in promoting a certain candidate?
If that is the conclusions of the intelligence community, if I'm confirmed as DNI, is that your question?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Thank you.
The Lawfare podcast is produced in cooperation with the Brookings Institution. If you haven't yet, please get on Facebook and Twitter and tell your friends and followers about the Lawfare podcast and give us a rating and review wherever you listen to us. You can also purchase Lawfare swag at www.thelawfarestore.com. This episode was edited by me, Elena Kagan. And until next time, thanks for
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.